Do Canadians lie about how much they make? We want you to tell us what you do for a living and tell us how much you make. And we'll try to see if you're bluffing or you're lying to us. That in about 45 minutes time. Get your lies ready to go. That's on the way. Margaret Atwood says that the new online harms bill is thought crimes. Well, Margaret Atwood has weighed in. We've got Michael Geist on the way to tell us whether or not it is. And your son is unfortunately no longer with us, took his own life. Should there be a picture and a memorial to him in the school yearbook? That in moments here on the iHeart Talk Radio Network.
It's News Talk tonight on the iHeart Radio Talk Network. Here's your host, Jim Richards.
We've been talking about the carbon tax for a while. In fact, we just talked about the carbon tax and how that one talking point. And again, I'm not here to try to defend the liberals. I want to get rid of the liberals as much as anybody. But 80% of people in this country are getting more money back than they spend. There's a talking point from the parliamentary budget officer that says by the time you pay the GST and the carbon tax, you're not getting more money back. Of course, you can add the GST to anything, and that would be true. That's not what the government promised. They promised that you would get the money that you spent on the carbon tax back, not plus the GST. So, I mean, is that a reasonable way to break it down? But it is true.
Prime Minister can't defend his policy, so he's changing the name. People hate the carbon tax because 60% more pay more into it than they get back in his phony rebates. So today he announced a costly...
So again, there's that talking point. But that discussion comes from a time where we learned that the Liberal government was going to give a break to people who lived in Atlantic Canada. And they were also going to give a break because there weren't a lot of alternatives in Atlantic Canada for heating fuels and in rural Canada. But how are they defining rural Canada? Apparently, that means, according to Statistics Canada, groups in densely populated cities like Toronto or Montreal, closely linked municipalities, if you are about, it's 1 hour or 100 kilometers, sorry, it's 100 kilometers and you can drive within 1 hour, you don't qualify. They don't consider you to be in rural Ontario. That sounds, sorry, rural Canada. That sounds like a dumb way to define that. And so there's a mayor who wanted to get some answers for his citizens. He is in Mono, Ontario, and John Creelman joins us right now. John, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
What is the definition to meet the criteria to get this rebate, as far as you understand?
The criteria seems to be that you fall within a Stats Canada census map. If you're in that map, lumped in with downtown Toronto, you're not eligible. If you fall on the periphery of it, you don't qualify. So I live in Dufferin County, and there's nearly 40,000 people in Dufferin County, including the town of Orangeville and the town of Mono, who did not qualify for the small community rural top-up, which is worth about $224 a year.
And what is that map? How is it defined as being close to Toronto? So if you're like, how is that defined as being close to Toronto?
So if you look at the map, there's a striking factor that includes the town of Orangeville and the town of Mono in the Toronto census area. But municipalities immediately to the east, west, and to the north are not in that census area, and therefore they're eligible for the top-up, but we're not. And we've been trying to get answers as to why we're not eligible, because we are a very rural community.
And yet you're being defined as being with what? Is it an hour within Toronto, like an hour's drive? So you can't be rural?
Well, I've never heard it described as the time to drive, but I can tell you that you can drive to Tos Agila, which is our municipality, to the east, and Amaranth to the west. And it's the same driving time as it is to the town of Orangeville, actually maybe even less than to the town of Mono.
And
so it's very, very quirky mapping, which was never, never intended to be a criteria for eligibility for any grant program or any rebate program.
So this is rural Canada, as rural as any place in rural Canada, just because you might be able to, on a weekend, maybe come into the town and see a Blue Jay game and then be able to drive back. They're saying that you don't qualify, yet in Atlantic Canada, places like Fredericton and Charlottetown do qualify.
Well, and that's a very strange anomaly as well. And we've heard of other municipalities that have gravel roads and covered bridges, and yet they are deemed to be urban in nature and therefore not qualifying for the rural top-up. In Mono, as an example, we have two provincial parks. We've got a ski resort. It is primarily agricultural and rural in the top two-thirds of the municipality, and yet we're out of luck. Town of Orangeville is out of luck, and we're trying to get answers.
What are the answers that you've heard so far?
Well, the answers appear to be totally bureaucratic. It's a convenient way of defining what is maybe nearly rural, but maybe not. I think they've admitted that the mapping does capture rural communities. You know, that's too bad, so sad. But we have not got an adequate explanation. I think the other media who have attempted to get answers from the government have come away frustrated as well.
What basically do most people in your town do for a living?
Well, I wouldn't call it a commuter a town, but a great many of our residents, in fact, live here and work in areas to the south. So they're getting in their vehicles on a daily basis. There is no viable commuter transit to the south. We have an inadequate GO bus service. So we are expending a lot of money on gasoline. In terms of our heating alternatives, most people in rural Mono are reliant on propane as opposed to natural gas. So they're being forced to purchase a product that is more expensive. Just generally, I have shown people my latest propane bill, and I pay as much in carbon tax on that bill as I do in HST.
And I'm guessing that a lot of people might say, no matter how you define it, somebody's going to be caught in no man's land, I'm guessing.
Well, I think that's a valid point, but my counter to that is that nobody ever asked us for our opinion. There is no mechanism to appeal the arbitrary mapping, you know, you're just out of luck if you just happen to be in the wrong place on the federal government's mapping. I'll give you an example. Georgina Island in the middle of Lake Simcoe is deemed to be part of Metro Toronto due to this mapping.
Oh, it was just kind of not funny if you live there, but it is ridiculous. You're right.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, that's even more absurd than our situation. It's an indigenous community, and you can only get there by ferry, and yet it is considered part of the downtown census area,
okay,
and therefore ineligible.
I got to run. It's pronounced Mono.
Mono.
Mono, not mono.
Correct. Thank you.
My apologies. Thank you very much, John. Appreciate it. John Creelman is the mayor of Mono, Ontario, disturbed about the way that this is being arbitrarily applied because of mapping supplied by Statistics Canada. In a moment, should a young man be included in a yearbook? That on the iHeart Talk Radio Network.
This is News Talk Tonight with Jim Richards on the iHeart Radio Talk Network.
The new online harms bill has been called by Margaret Atwood a thought crime bill, Orwellian. We'll find out if it actually is when we talk to probably the foremost voice when it comes to the law intersecting with the internet and technology, and that is Michael Geist, who will be here in about 15 minutes. I'm Jim Richards. This is the iHeartTalk Radio Network. Also, this hour, apparently Canadians lie when it comes to their salary. Who's asking people how much they make? Is that something that would be a normal thing? Maybe on a first date, you would ask somebody how much they make? But would you expect them to lie? We want you to call us up and tell us how much you make and what your job is. You can or cannot lie. And we will try to guess whether or not you're lying. That is in 20 minutes time. We want liars and non-liars to tell us how much money they make. That number could be fictitious or it could be right. And if you're lying to us, we'll try to guess, given the profession that you tell us, how much money you make. That coming up in a half an hour. But I'd like your phone calls on this. This happened in New Brunswick, where in 2021, a young man named Carson took his own life. His mom has been very active still in the school because it makes her feel alive. It makes her feel connected to the memory of her son when she volunteers at dances and other events that the school is throwing. It helps her. It helps her to see other people obtaining all of these other kind of life markers. Graduation is one of them, and she wanted to be involved in graduation. She also wants her son to be remembered in the yearbook. It's the final year he's going to be eligible for a yearbook. So he wants his picture in there. She wants his picture to be in the yearbook.
We're going to be on 3 years in June, and I kind of envisioned his grad year being a part of something, like kind of being there in his place. Then I started thinking, we're getting really close to the end of the year. How are we going to incorporate Carson into the yearbook? So it started with that email in January where I reached out to the school, and their answer was that they would get in touch with Anglophone School District South. Just radio silence, and what they do say is so completely archaic that it's hard to believe that they wouldn't include him.
So they actually told her to leave us alone at a certain point. Your son died 3 years ago. And they're like, yeah, no, it's not going to happen. Leave us alone. They did suggest using a picture of their son on a page called Mental Health Monday, but they didn't want their kid to be remembered as a poster boy for mental health. They wanted their child to be remembered as just one of the kids, the way they try to remember him. So here is Greg and Amy. Again, they're the parents of Carson.
Pick any school in any district from any year around the province, and you'll probably find a yearbook with a memorial page in it. So we didn't think that this was anything out of the ordinary. And none of them talk about how these children left this world.
No.
You know, they just talk about how beautiful of a person this child was.
So to hear somebody say that your child can't be included when they're already not here, it's really damaging.
In the reporting, the CBC reached out to one of the foremost psychiatrists on how young people interact with suicide. And there is a concern that it could be contagious. I know that sounds a little ridiculous, but that's what the concern is. That's why the news, when somebody is committed suicide, they don't report that. So the experts are saying, yeah, don't do that. Don't make it a mental health thing. And the experts are also saying, yeah, you know what? There's probably more downside than there is, unfortunately, hurting the feelings of this family. But that's tough. People want to be sympathetic. Don't you? Don't you want to be sympathetic to what they want? Doesn't it kind of make sense what she wants? I think everybody grieves in a different way. But what would you say? I want to open up the phone lines right now. And I don't have a lot of time. I've got about 4 minutes here. What is the proper thing to do? I don't know, like, if he was part of some sort of club, can you get a picture of him being a part of, I don't know, the tennis club, the chess club, the hockey team, whatever it might be, and include him that way? But I would agree that a special memorial page probably isn't the thing to do. But what says you? 1-855-633-1010. 1-855-633-1010. Here's Nancy, who was, I thought, a kind of a powerful phone call that I heard earlier today when this issue was discussed.
I think definitely there should be something in the yearbook like the parents want. I don't think a full page, you know, but, and also, I belong to a support group for people who have lost, you know, a loved one to suicide. There's a lot of parents, and we don't want our kids stigmatized. Like, we don't want our kids remembered for just what happened at their end. So I don't know about the mental health page either. Just some, like, you know, small thing in the yearbook, I think.
I don't know. You could, maybe it's under people who didn't graduate. Or we celebrate that. I don't know how you would do that. 1-855-633-1010 if you've lost somebody to suicide. I thought this call was particularly heartbreaking. Shirley is a caller here, lost her son to suicide, and is against the idea because she has seen how this idea of suicide being contagious can be a real thing.
A year later, almost to the day, my daughter's boyfriend committed suicide, and in his notes, he remembered doing it. He did it on that day to remember the death of my son.
Wow. Wow.
So no, I don't agree at all with the parents. I think sometimes parents do something like that for their own benefit, not for the benefit of who they've lost. For the impact of the people around
them. I can understand that they want this and they think it would be a nice thing, but it's unfortunately a yearbook for the people who are going to the school, not for the parents. It's something that people who are graduating will look back at and not necessarily the parents. I don't know. I can't remember if my parents ever looked through the yearbook. I always hoped that they wouldn't because what my fellow students would write in my yearbook. I always thought that would be a funny segment to bring out your yearbook from grade 12 and read what everyone thought about you when you were 18 or 19 or 17 if you were a brainiac. Well, actually, it doesn't have to be from the graduating year. But that's real proof from a caller, Shirley, suggesting that, yes, indeed, the suicide of her son. A year later, her daughter's boyfriend, citing her son's suicide, took his own life. It's a heartbreaking story, and unfortunately, I think the right answer might be to break the hearts of those parents. But it's not a parent's yearbook, it's a student's yearbook.
Welcome back to News Talk Tonight with Jim Richards on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
I'm not sure what my level of confidence is in the callers calling up and telling us what they do for a living and telling us how much they make. And then we have to decide if you're lying. Apparently, people lie about their salaries. And we want to know how much of a liar you are. You don't have to tell us the actual salary. You just have to tell us whether or not we're in the ballpark when we guess and whether or not you're lying. It would be great if one or two people told us the truth. But let me get back to something that we talked about last week. It is the online harms bill. We have, listen, no matter what you might think of him, Pierre Poilievre does bring up a good point.
What does Justin Trudeau mean when he says the word hate speech?
But the question there is, and I bring this up in our discussion with our expert, is that, you know, I'm a big proponent of free speech. And then when you look around and you find out who is in your tent, it's usually a bunch of bigots, right? It's like, no, free speech, free speech, free speech. But you're there, you're standing in a group of, oh, these are my friends on this issue? So community standards is sometimes what people might want to go by. But when we're coming up with legislation that is supposed to keep kids safe from being bullied, or AI nude fakes, or predators who are trying to traffic them or to bully them, and we see the result of what has been suicide. So I think a bunch of us are like, hey, well, some legislation is better than nothing. So earlier today, actually it was yesterday, we find out that Margaret Atwood thinks that this is thought crime and thinking that this is a little Orwellian. She is commenting on an editorial that says this is no exaggeration. The legislation authorizes house arrest and electrical tagging for a person considered likely to commit a further crime. It's right there in the text. If a judge believes there is reasonable grounds to fear a future crime that has yet to occur, they can incarcerate the person. Failure to cooperate nets an additional year in jail. If that's not establishing a thought police, what is, according to the editorial? So we asked Michael Geist, who is a professor of law at the University of Ottawa, and he is the chair of the Internet and E-commerce Law Division. We asked him whether or not this Orwellian tag is a bit much if this new legislation is thought police.
Well, I think there are real concerns in the bill. I mean, I think the source that she's relying on, it's exaggerates, I think, some of the concerns in the bill. But at the same time, I think the government is so far gone out of its way to downplay it. And I think that that's really a mistake. So, I mean, the short answer is there are some good things in the bill. There are some real problematic things in the bill. I kind of wish the government would be open to fixing it as opposed to trying to defend provisions that seem pretty indefensible to me. I don't
know. Like, it just seems like this government's thing to like have these wide berths and then, hey, we'll figure it out when we get there. And well, maybe we won't figure it out when we get there.
Yeah, and this is the sort of issue that you cannot wait to figure it out later. You know, I think that this was always recognized as the piece of internet legislation that was going to be the most controversial, the most challenging, because it went directly to speech-related issues and the responsibility that platforms had. And I think, interestingly, when the government stuck to the issues around what they wanted the big internet platforms to do, they did pretty well. I think there are some concerns about how the whole thing will be overseen. But they really did listen to, I think, a lot of the experts that warned them about certain no-go zones. But once they jumped into some of the criminal code provisions and the Human Rights Act, that's where I think a lot of the concerns have come from. And they really feel so almost like a different bill. It's not core to what they were trying to achieve.
So can you go through what you think they got right?
Yeah, I think at its heart, and what the bill was really billed as, was a bill to deal specifically with online harms and the role that the internet platforms, you know, the Googles and Facebooks and Twitters of the world, what would they be required to do? And on that front, some of their early proposals several years ago raised real red flags. There was a lot of concern. They went back to the drawing board, and they've come up with a system that sort of speaks to this notion of these platforms having to act responsibly. Well, what does that mean? It includes things like giving people the ability to block other users, to flag content that raises concerns, and to develop a digital safety plan that will identify how they're going to mitigate against some of those harms. Now, those may raise some issues. We'll have to see what the plans look like. But as a starting point, I think for the most part, it's something that we can work with. And yet, once you get into the oversight they've built into that and then into the Criminal Code and Human Rights Act provisions, that's where Atwood starts looking at some of the coverage and says, hold on a second, there's some real concerns
here. Yeah. What about you? What concerns you? Because I remember as a young broadcaster being an absolutist when it came to free speech, and then you look around and you find out who's in your tent. And sometimes that's just what you have to do to, you know, to stand up for free speech. But what are the concerns here?
Well, I think on the platform side, the concerns, I think, are primarily about how they're going to enforce this, recognizing that there's going to have to be some enforcement mechanism, and there isn't an obvious solution there. The CRTC, the broadcast and telecom regulator, isn't well suited for this. You certainly don't want the government making these kinds of decisions.
Yep.
So they plan to create a digital safety commission. Now, that in theory might be okay, but they haven't given it a lot of oversight. They've given it a massive amount of powers, hearings that they can, if they decide, can be conducted in secret. And they've even explicitly said that they aren't subject to conventional rules of evidence. And I just think this is a mistake. I mean, trust and confidence in this legislation is at the end of the day going to be premised largely on who enforces it and how they enforce it. And on that front, I think they've just done a really terrible job.
The wide berth of the unintended consequences of meaning well have certainly been problematic when it comes to human rights legislation and people who have been the deciders on, you know, who has violated that.
Yeah, I think that's right. And that gets us a little bit into the other half of the bill, which are these Criminal Code and Human Rights Act provisions. And as I say, those don't deal at all with this notion of, well, what do we want the platforms to do? Instead, they up the penalties to as much as life in prison for any crime that's committed that includes a hate component. I mean, I just think this is silly and unsustainable. And we've had the former Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Beverly McLaughlin, already say that she expects that to be challenged. And then we've got the reopening of the door to complaints at the Human Rights Commission. And experience in the past suggests that this really almost weaponizes the system.
Yep.
And threatens to create just this massive flood of complaints from all directions.
So what is the solution here? I mean, it's a hard one to come up with because nobody likes what happens online when some really mean-spirited people can get the sales in their wins, but I'm not sure that you can protect against all of that and still live in a free country.
That's true. I do think that the government has identified some real harms. Many of them are focused on kids, and I think everyone would agree that those are real issues. And when you get into content-related stuff beyond kids, much of it is focused on inciting terrorism and violence and hatred. Those are going to raise some questions. I mean, some people are going to say that they want a very high threshold. The law seeks to rely on court rulings and the like to establish some of those thresholds. And as I say, I think when they're really focused on trying to mitigate, not eliminate, not remove all sorts of content necessarily or block websites, but rather putting on some responsibility to the platforms to mitigate against the harms that arise, essentially to say, listen, this content already violates your policies and the guidelines you have for your website. We just want some better transparency about what you're doing and a commitment to follow through on what you say you're going to do. I think that's actually a pretty decent starting point, but it goes off the rails once you get into these enforcement arms that raise issues. And then, of course, as we were saying, start the criminal code type provisions that talk about life in prison in some instances.
Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I think, a lot of the time they're like, oh, yeah, but it's good to have that legislation in there. it would never be used. Well, then why is it in there then? And sometimes maybe you have the guardrails, so you have to rethink it and expand it a little bit later on. I'd rather do that than the unintended consequences of having this such a wide berth here. It is News Talk Tonight. When we come back, we want your jobs, and lie to us about your salary at 1-855-633-1010.
This is News Talk Tonight with Jim Richards on the iHeartRadio Talk
Tony
Network.
Tony is crying in my ear because he's, what? There's no way. That website says that you make more money than I do? Okay, nobody can hear you. You're talking in my ear. All right, let
according
me tell
to
you
the
what
website.
Okay, we'll get to that in a second. Sorry, I got in front of myself. Let me explain the topic first. And we want people's phone calls right now. 1-855-633-1010. 1-855-633-1010. A piece in the Globe and Mail today says that Canadians lie about their salary, and there are reasons behind that. So, listen. We got our liar lines open. It's a specific line. It's 1-855-633-1010. I do believe that's different than the normal line. 1-855-633-1010. Call us and either tell us. I hope some people, well, first of all, I hope some people call. But I hope some people, further to my first wish, I hope some people tell us the truth. Now, we're going to try to guess whether or not you're lying about your salary or whether or not you're telling the truth. So, 1-855-633-1010. My level of confidence right now is at a 5. Please prove me wrong. Tell us what your profession is, and then tell us how much you make. You could be lying to us. And then we will decide. Now, there are a couple of factors in here. 1-855-633-1010. Why are people saying that they're, first of all, two numbers. 38% of people say that their salary is lower. And I guess they're doing that to avoid jealousy, resentment, maintaining privacy, or equalizing a relationship. So, I don't know, who are you, what relationship? Doesn't your partner want to hear that you make more money? So that's the reason that people are saying it's lower. Because, I don't know, maybe you want your, you don't want your friend, you're like, you're on the same plane as your friend, and you're like, oh yeah, no, I only make something within the amount of money. If they make $100,000, you're like, I only make $100,000 too. Meanwhile, you're high-paid lawyer, and you're telling him you only make $100,000, but that makes him feel good and makes you fit in better. But the top reason people are inflating their salary is apparently a negotiating leverage. I guess if you're up for a job interview, you would say, yeah, I made $300,000 in my last job, but I'll take the $70,000 that you're... you can come up a little bit? Social status and image of a family that would be socially acceptable.
Police.
And you're on a first date and you really want to get lucky. I'm guessing. My Ferrari, it's in the shop. 1-855-633-1010. 1-855-633-1010. Now, I sent Tony a website that has all of these professions and salaries associated to them.
Thank you very much for your time.
I can tell you right now that the salary that the website says that I make is $54,000 a year, according to the website.
Thanks for having
me. I can tell you I'm overpaid.
I think
compared to what I make, just barely a little over that. Let's go to the phones. We do have some liars that are going to participate. The liar lines are open. Again, we want to try to guess whether or not you are lying about your salary, and hopefully we'll have a couple of people telling us the truth. 1-855-633-1010. 1-855-633-1010. Let's go to Francis. Francis, you are on News Talk Tonight. How are you, Francis?
Not bad. How are you?
Great. Thank you very much. Do you want to tell us what you do for a living?
I'm a palliative nurse.
That's a very important job.
Yep.
I'm going to say that you, are you going to tell us how much you make?
And then I will tell you how much I make.
And then we'll guess if you're lying or not.
Okay. I make $80,000 a year.
Okay. I'm going to weigh in first. I think you're lying. I think, unfortunately, that's what I would pay you, but I think you probably make less than that. Tony, what's your guess?
I'm going to go with the same thing. I wish we were paying you $80,000 a year. Unless you're the only nurse in town, you're probably not making that much.
No. What about you, Noah?
I think she's telling the truth.
All right, let us find out. Francis, are you telling the truth? Do you, as a palliative care nurse, make $80,000 a year?
Yes, I do.
Oh, that's great. I think it's great. Do you think you deserve more, or is that like a salary that makes you happy?
It's very intense work.
I'm sure it is.
I think really it should go by your experience level too.
Yep.
And therefore it should be more, but that's besides the point. I make the same as a graduate, pretty close to the same as what a graduate would be coming out with the palliative training.
What a tough job though, man. That is something else. I don't know how you, it's another discussion for another day on how you might unwind or choose not to have that kind of wear it every day. Francis, thank you very much for your phone call. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Okay.
And when I say that, I thought that $80,000 was, you know what? I would pay her way more if I could. I just, when I hear of how overworked nurses are and what they're getting paid right now, I just think that is, I don't want to say a reasonable number, but it made sense. I thought it was too high is what I'm trying to say. All right, on the liar lines, 1-855-633-1010, 1-855-633-1010. Let us now go to Perry. Perry, what is your profession?
I'm a forklift driver.
Forklift driver. And how much are you?
In a warehouse.
How much are you claiming that you are making, whether it's a lie or not? What are we guessing? What's the number you're going to tell us?
$22 an hour.
Okay, so what about, okay, $22 an hour? I'm going to say that you're not lying. I'm going to say that that is probably, well, is it a union shop?
No.
No. I'm going to say that that's probably accurate. Tony, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's pretty close. I would say, you
take
know
your
what?
Time, Tony.
I would say he makes less.
Yeah, let's have more dead air, Tony. Think about it a little bit more.
Let me do that.
Kidding. Tony, I'm kidding. Yeah. Like, I love you, Tony. What about you, Noah? And take your time, Noah.
I think he's telling the truth.
You think he's telling the truth?
Take your time, Noah.
Okay, $22 an hour. We're both guessing that you tell the truth. What was it? Okay, are you telling the truth or not?
I'm lying.
You make more.
Maybe like 50 cents more.
Oh, okay, so it was close. What did your pay stub say at the end of the year, or your T whatever it's called at the end of the year? How much did you make?
I can tell you that every 2 weeks I make about $13.50.
$13.50. Okay. Times that up. Every 2 weeks, times that up.
It's pretty close. It's about the same.
All right,
yeah.
Perry, thank you very much for being our second panelist. And unfortunately, the segment is over and we don't have time for the rest of the calls. There were no other calls. So the segment ended right in time.
You earned that 54K today.
I know. I did. Thank you very much. I'm sure the boss is going, we pay you more, but you're probably worth about 54K. It's probably what all you're good for. It's the iHeart Talk Radio Network.